Hi everyone, welcome back from lunch. Our next speaker is Russ Weekly. At the first Webstock we held in 2006, Russ was one of the speakers and talked about this crazy idea of building a website with no navigation and just using tags and search for people to find their way around. And it was quite a hit at the conference, so much so that about 3 months later, I was reading an RFP from a government ministry here, Go Ministry for the Environment, that said, and we want to do stuff like Russ Weekly's presentation at Webstock. So this was an RFP that they did. So I thought that was really cool that some of the stuff that he talked about there had been kind of taken on board in terms of ways you could do stuff. Think of this talk as how it turned out. Russ works at the Australian Museum. He's co-founder of the Web Standards Group, which is a worldwide mailing list come group, which really Webstock started from. He works 22 and a half hours a day, and he's here to talk to us about how things did work out. Please welcome Russ Weekly.
G'day. That's a good start. Right. As Mike said, just talk amongst yourselves. Does anyone use Remote Buddy? Do you love it? There we go. Right, I'm Russ. As Mike said, I work at the Australian Museum. Come on. And that's a long way from here. Does anyone work in sort of really cutting edge, amazing, high tech sort of amazing places? Put up your hand. Who works for the government? Put up your hand. I feel your pain. As Mike said, 3 years ago, I stood on stage and talked about this weird idea where you just destroy all navigation and you put everything in tags. And at the time I was very bitter because we'd sort of presented the museum without much luck. But the big question is, what happened? What happened after that? So it's been 4 years since we actually talked to management about it. And since then, lots of discussions, lots of arguments, lots of punch-ups, tears, all that sort of stuff. And over that time, it's changed shape all over the place. So we've added things and taken them away. But you'd be surprised to know that we're almost there, which is in government circles, it's pretty fast. But why am I sharing this with you? Because this isn't even live yet. It's not like I've come here and you know, made this wonderfully successful site that's making us millions of dollars. It isn't even live. What's the point of sharing it with you? Well, the reason why I want to share it with you is that it's a bit hard to explain, but I live in sort of two worlds. One is the commercial world, and the other is public service world. In the commercial world, I run my own business. In the commercial, in the private sector or public service or whatever, I work for the Australian Museum. The commercial world is often rapid, and you want to do things fast. It's all about money. And in the public public service, it's all about analyzing. And this favorite word of mine, accountability. Has anyone ever said that to you? Who's had that word thrown at them in the past? My God, look at you all. Are you all accountable? I'm not either. I have no accountability. I have no conscience. So anyway, while the commercial sector is incredibly fast, public service is often incredibly slow and frustrating. But I'm here to tell you this tiny little bit of good news about it. Because for 4 years I've been thinking, my life is a piece of shit. And then suddenly I realized that there's this tiny glimmer of gold in here. There's one unexpected benefit that you may not be aware of, and this is something when you're looking at yourself in the mirror every morning and saying, I just got to get out of this world, then maybe this just one glimmer of hope will be useful to you as well. Because one thing that has been interesting is having to defend everything 6 million times to 17 levels of management and all that sort of stuff. I may be exaggerating slightly there. But it's made us really carefully consider everything that's going into it. So in the commercial sector, as many of you people have probably experienced, you sit down with a client, we need a wiki. And there's absolutely no thought to it at all. And you have to reverse engineer it with them and say, why do you want a wiki? You know, what's it going to be used for? Who's your target audiences? For the government, it's the opposite. It's us going to management and saying, we need a wiki or whatever it is. And then them saying to you, justify it. And you have to go through 17 steps to justify it. But what's interesting is that often you learn a lot about why you really want to do things and really think through the benefit and weaknesses of everything. Does that make you feel slightly better? Yeah, I know. I mean, shit. Okay, so hopefully some of the lessons we've learned, even though we're not live, could be beneficial to you or not. And if they're not, feel free just to throw chairs at me at the end. That's fine. So a quick background. We started in 94. Hands up those who weren't even born in 94. You bastards. Our first site went live, major site went live in 97, and it grew enormously. Like many sites in that period, when they grow enormously, it's all, you know, bits bolted on the sides. And so currently the site's 43,000 pages and about 16 sort of sites in there. But it's not going well. You know, it sounds okay, it's not. So what's going wrong? Well, the site's gradually deteriorated over this time. And anyone that heard it 3 years ago, I talked about it being a piece of shit, basically. It's hard to maintain. Some things are in custom-built systems, and some things are hand-coded. And even with content management systems, they're all different sorts of content management systems. So basically, it's not really working very well. The other thing is that users can't find their way around the site at all. So while we sort of, you know, think it's hard to manage, it's actually even worse for users. And the other thing is that people can interact much better in other sites now. So the bottom line is we've lost relevance. A quick example is that when we were at our peak, there was no sites where you could share, or less sort of sites where you could share. So us providing a one-way contact stream with people, you know, saying this is some information, that was okay. But nowadays, people look for sites where they can find information quickly, but also sites where they can interact. And it's sort of frustrating in a way because the museum has the ability to provide really rich information around any topic because we have research people within the museum and they produce publications and they produce research projects and all that sort of thing. We also have a vast range of collection items. So the reality is we should be able to provide a very rich experience or story around any sort of topic related to us. So 4 years ago, we said, this is just wrong. We've got to make a change. And the web team began looking at how to change the website. But it was even that was a frustrating experience. So two people, this girl called Lisa and I, decided, let's just start from scratch. And so what we did is we just completely forgot everything. And we started with one principle, which is, what happens if we just dump the whole site and we began with a search bar? And we thought, my God, we've cracked it. And then we thought, there's this other thing called Google that sort of did it before us. But, you know, that was irrelevant because we knew we'd be bigger than them. But the point was that we started with something very simple like search, and then we started to grow on that and talk about taggings and stuff like that. But the point was, what we really wanted to do was to build a rich, interactive website. And the aim we had was to have four key objectives. First one was about communication. The current site was completely static. There was no way to actually have any discussion at all. And we want to encourage the concept of three levels of discussion. Talking to people, having them talk back, but also having them talk to each other as well. Maybe it's a novel idea. The other things we wanted them to do is to share their content with us. We knew that there's a lot of people out there that had really interesting stories, really interesting information, and it would have been great that they actually come and share their stuff with us. Another thing is that the current site is just incredibly convoluted. So I'm sure none of your sites have this problem, but ours had like 16 levels of hierarchy. So if you wanted to get somewhere, you had to sort of, you know, have navigate through the content. We want to make it as simple as possible. And finally, we want to make it easy to publish. The current system was a nightmare. It still is a nightmare right now, and hopefully when it goes live, it'll change. So what did management think about all this? Well, I suppose you've got to think about it from their point of view. Imagine two people going to management and saying, sitting there and saying, hey, we just want to rip the shit out of our site, just scrap it all, take off all hierarchies, put it up all in tags, and it'll be great. And what's even better, open it up to the public and let them put in whatever they want. Do you think anyone was shocked by that? immediately, you know, that they will, immediately when you talk to people like that, you can see them sort of leaning back at the table. And the initial reaction was just not very good at all. So there was a lot of resistance to it. But, you know, basically it took us 4 years. The first year was me leaving. I actually walked away and said, oh, bugger, it's not going to happen. When I came back, they still hadn't done anything. So we started saying, well, maybe, you know, this is still really a way to go. And then a year of planning and then a year of building. So I guess the question you might be asking, if you're not already asleep, that is how the hell does this thing work? I'm going to break it into three quick chunks. The first one is the overall concept, and then how users use the site, and then how our authors use the site. So the site now has just three categories, three levels. In the current site, there's just masses of levels. Now we've broken down to three. There's categories, sections, and assets. Three simple levels. Most importantly, the site is built from the floor up. Many people, when they're planning sites, in the older hierarchical systems, they built from the top down. They start with categories, and then sections, and then pages. We wanted to start from the bottom up. And the way we did this was breaking apart the concept of pages. So in many older websites, there is these traditional pages where you write some content and you apply some images to that, and that whole thing becomes a page. We wanted everything to be pulled apart. Everything's an asset. An image is an asset. A movie's an asset. Each one of these can be interacted with separately, but you can put them all together. So you can actually create an asset out of content and images and movies, etc. And what that means is that you can build literally from the ground up and gradually build up on top of it. So what we end up with, from the user's point of view, there's not a lot of difference, but from our point of view, there's quite a range of assets. And each of them operates slightly different. They have a different, slightly different purpose. So there's page assets, fact sheet assets, image assets, movie assets. And each of them, like if you had took an event asset, for example, it might look similar to any other asset, but operates in a particular way. So it will appear in an event calendar. You can still, when you get to it, you can still interact with it. But where it appears and how it appears within the site is slightly different. The other thing is that we wanted these assets to be able to appear in multiple locations in the site. And this is one of the fundamental principles of this system. The best way we've explained it was how we went to management with it. And the way I explained it is, imagine if every one of your assets was a sheet of paper on the floor, and you scrap them all out on the floor. The traditional model of building a site is you put them up into neat piles. You might end up with 10 or 13 piles, and they're all neat piles, and you say, there we have it, the perfect structure. And you justify it with user testing and everything like that, card sorting. But you end up with these piles of content. And the problem with that is, what happens if one of these pages really should exist also in another pile, or maybe two or three piles? But even worse, what happens if this page in some other model relates somewhere across to the other thing? This traditional model of putting things into piles doesn't work. So the way we said it is, let's just scrap it all again, put all the pages out on the floor, and imagine if you used a more abstract model, and you could put your hand over the top of those pages and say, I'm going to build a story or a section about mammals, and I'll have that page and that page and that page and this image and that movie. And then that's an abstract concept. They're not forced into this. Because you can build another one. You can say, now I'm going to talk about kangaroos. And I'm going to use one of the same assets that happens to be in mammals. And I'm going to put those ones in. And you can build a story or a section around that. The beauty is that all of them still exist at the base level. Every single asset is there. They can be searched and found and tagged and all that sort of stuff at the base level. But they can be brought into any story you want to deliver. Another thing that's really important is that we wanted to allow multiple ways of getting through content. So when you hit an asset in the old site, you're stuck in a silo model. Do you know what I mean by a silo? A silo is, I mean, traditionally a silo is a large container filled with rotten fruit, which is quite apt for what we're talking about here. But a silo in navigation is that where you go into a section and you can't get back out. And the traditional model is where the Australian Museum is currently. If you go into a section, to get out of that section, you have to go up and across and back down. But what happens if you're in a page and you really want to get across? You've gone into a section on birds and you want to get across to behavior. You can't do it with this model. Whereas if you give them multiple methods of navigating around the content, then that's not a problem. So a quick way to think about it is the current way that we're working gives them a wide variety of navigation methods. And some of these are quite similar to what you've seen before, but the content, which actually says navigation, which shouldn't, of course, that should have said content. The red section is the current section you're in. So if you've come in through a section, it'll actually open that section up for you. And that's the story that you're in at the moment. But below that actually says, oh, and here are the other stories that are related to it as well. So if that asset exists in a number of other places, they'll also be displayed. So you can actually change stories if you want and move off. As well as that, like many sites up in the top right, authors can assign something they feel is related that may not be in one of those stories down the left side. Below, tags, which are completely different stories again. Really what tags are is users and authors' stories. What it means is they are able to go out and gather anything that might be related to that just by a tag, and that's a story in itself. And in the footer, obviously, rich footer allows you to provide all sorts of other information, like what's new, the latest topics, blog posts, and things like that. So they've got a wide variety of ways to get out of the stuff. So that's how the basic system works. But what about users? What's the benefit for them coming in? Well, regardless of the motivation for actually commenting, one of the key things they do is they get in and comment on any asset. And that's been a real challenge to talk to the museum about, because I don't know about your dealings with public service, but invariably when you say something, they want to try and wind it backwards. Has anyone had that before? We want to comment on every asset. Well, what about we just do it on these ones for now? No, everything. Well, fuck off. We also want them to have the ability to tag on every single asset. And I'll talk to you a bit later about this concept that really blows public servants' mind, that because they can't possibly think of it themselves. Why would someone want to comment or tag that asset? But users, we want them to have that ability. We want them to be able to tag or comment any asset. And they'll be broken up into author and keyword. I'll talk about that in a minute. The important thing is that there's got to be a purpose to it. And I've seen, and probably you've all seen the same as well, there's a lot of times when you see sites that tag, and there's actually not real much of a purpose to it. So yes, it might be used to allow people to get to other assets of the same tag. But we wanted our tagging to have some purpose as well as this. And so all of our tags are added to the search algorithm, which means that as users come and tag our site, the search is actually enriched. And that becomes very important when you use spelling mistakes, which I'll talk to you soon. Another thing, you've probably never heard of this in your life, but we're going to do something called favoriting. Is that cool? Yeah, I can see. So, yeah, we'll do favorites and we'll do sets. But again, this came about for a very particular reason. We didn't do them because we said, oh, everyone else is doing favorites, let's do favorites. The reason it came about was because of user testing and, or actually focus groups. And in focus groups, we met with teachers. Are there any teachers in the room? One lonely teacher. Well, they're probably very different in New Zealand, but in Australia or in New South Wales as part of Australia, they've got no time, they've got no equipment, they've got one computer between, you know, 20-odd staff or 30 staff. And what we found was they're also very untechnical. So these people have very little information, very little computer savvy, and yet they want to share resources with their students. And so in some of the focus groups, we're talking to them about, wouldn't it be good if you could go to a site, like the museum site, which we know they use very regularly, and actually come to assets and go, I'll save that one, and I'll save that one, I'll save that one. But then the best step would be able to go, okay, I've saved all these, and I'm going to bundle them all up, and that's going to be my class 1A, and I'll send it off to them. So what these sets allow them to do is to bundle assets together and share them with their students and things like that. And of course it can be used by anyone, but that's just one group. The other thing, of course, very important, probably the most important thing, is we want people to share their own stories, their own experiences. So underneath any page, like if we've got a page on bent-eared bats, we really want people to be able to share their own information about it. So we're allowing people to upload images, upload movies, upload audio, and more importantly, just talk to us about it, ask questions. What we're finding is that the museum has a lot of weird people hanging around it. People are into birds, people are into fish, people are into sea slugs. They're all weird human beings. Is anyone into birds here? Thank God for that. Does anyone collect stamps? A teacher and a stamp collector. That's a tick in every box. There are people, these subsets of human beings that just thrive on these bizarre little areas. And, you know, birdologists are the classic example. But these people are incredibly passionate about their topic. They go out on the weekends and look at birds. They never shoot them, they just look at them, which I think defeats the purpose. And they take photos of them, and they avidly want to share this information. And yet, our site is locked. We have a page on birds they can't do anything with. With the new system, we want to open up and say, tell us what you think. Hopefully that'll be a much better way to go. The other thing we want to do is reward them for this. We want to make our job easier too. So this expert status, although it sounds a bit elitist, is to really solve two problems. One, we're lazy bastards. And number two, what we want to really do is to encourage them to do more for our site. So people that are actually answering questions really well or really taking part, we can actually ask them, would you like to become an expert? And what that means is they can assist us in helping to monitor the site, answer questions, encourage discussion, and actually help us write content for the site. What does that do for them? Well, if they are very into the topic, it's actually an acknowledgement of the work that they're doing. And for the staff, it actually helps them, because really, we want to treat this like deputization. We've got a limited number of staff, and we're possibly going to have a lot of interactions going on. And these experts can assist staff in maintaining that content. Most importantly, and this is where I find a lot of sites, and I probably think you've probably experienced the same sort of thing, we want it to be a seamless process. So I don't know about you, but we've seen a lot of sites where they've got their formal site, and then they say, no, I want you to interact. Bugger off over there. I think someone yesterday was talking about that as well. And they just send people away, and you know, there's no interaction on the main area of the site. Or sometimes they get it right, and they've got social stuff going on the pages themselves. But when you jump off to something else, it's a totally different experience. There's another museum which does this, where they've got rich site, but when you go off to look through their collections, you go off into a totally different environment, different search paradigm, different navigation. Really what we want to have is to be able to jump anywhere. So you could be looking at a page on bent-eared bats and jump off to an event on it or a blog post on it, anything associated with that. Thank you for blinding me, Mick. So that's for users. What's in it for staff? Do we care about staff? We do, because we're really, the web team is going to hand over the reins to everyone. So one of our roles is to hand over the power to the authors. And the most important phrase is every. We want every staff member to become an author. Can you imagine how well that went down with management? Every staff member. The initial reaction many people have is, oh, you mean the scientists and the educators. And we're saying, no, every single person. Every single person in our museum has an interesting story to tell. There are people that work at the front desk. There are people that are inquiry people that sit up there and get people come to them with the most bizarre little insects that they found in their garden. These are amazing stories. And there are also people that come into the museum with, you know, major psychological problems who think they've got insects burrowing into their skin. How cool would that be to read about? I think so. But anyway, we really want them to be all of our staff to become authors. Another thing which initially wasn't well received, but now the museum is 100% behind, is published directly. That was a humongous change, but it's a powerful one when it happens. Because to me, it's about trust. Really, if you're saying, you're a paid staff member, but we're not going to let you publish something, it's really saying, you know, we don't trust you to do your job. Luckily, the museum has come around to this completely, and they say, yep, bugger it. You're a staff member, you publish it. And if there's a problem, we'll edit it, or we'll delete it. And if you're a turd, if you keep, you know, putting up stuff that's bad, we'll delete your account. You know, everything is solvable. In the system, we are trying to do it based on three tiers. There's a whole range of assets that we're going to be able to produce, and every staff member will look at them and go, three levels. You don't need to publish to that. We will publish it with pre-approval, or you can publish live. But the main point is to try and get everyone to be able to publish live on assets that are relevant. So there's some that were, you know, that you don't need that sort of approval. So like a media release, which you may just want the media people to do. There's some people you just wouldn't give that privilege, and some people you may want to have it checked on the way through. But almost every other asset, general pages, movies, sound files, all these sort of things, direct published by staff. The key point about this is we want ownership. We don't want them to come back to the web team ever again. We want to be at the pub. We want them to be doing work. So what we want to do is to give them the keys to their assets. You drive it. You manage it. It's your responsibility. Enjoy. The other thing we want to produce is blogs. Now, I know what you're thinking. Nothing like a good corporate blog. Hands up who loves corporate blogs. I do. Anyone else that loves a corporate one? No one in the room. Corporate blogging. We don't want a corporate blog. We want passionate blogs from individuals. Doesn't matter if there's 10, 20, 100. What we really want to do is to give staff the ability to blog and present a personal message. And it doesn't matter to us if it's a bird specialist talking to 10,000 bird freaks or if it's a scientist who specializes in, believe it or not, the upside down fly, and there's only three people in the world that listen to him. It doesn't matter to us. What matters is that he's committed and he's passionate about communicating that information. So what we really want to try and do is to create a wide range of passionate individual blogs. And of course, microblogging. When I first went for a job interview at the Australian Museum, this is a bit embarrassing to admit, it was 22 years ago or something, and I sat in front of this old guy who told me he'd been there for 20 years. And I thought, God, you're a loser. Who the fuck would stay at a museum for 20 years? Now, the odd thing was, I stayed there just as long as him, and I ended up marrying his daughter. Fucked in the head. Anyway, the story he told me that day is how the first day he came to the museum, and he said they took him in a truck and they took him down to a beach and they picked up this huge dead whale and they brought it back to the museum and then they cut this bastard up in the back of the parking lot. And I remember thinking, these people are freaks. I'd just come out of college. Admittedly, I'd been kicked out of college, but I came out of college where everyone was neat and tidy. They didn't take chainsaws to dead animals in the back car park. But what amazed me is the museum is the most insane place. And that's amazing if people could be streaming these blog posts out, Twitter posts out about it. Because the shit that goes on, you couldn't believe. A scientist gets a call from the city fish markets, goes down there in a car, and they've dredged up some, you know, from deep ocean, some amazing fish. And what happens is they send out an email to staff going, hey, pop down a fish if you want to see this really fucked up looking fish. And that's great. I mean, some of us go and have a look, but wouldn't that be great if it was going out on Twitter? One time we've actually managed to achieve this was a picture called Mr. Blobby. And if you're online now, you could do a search for Mr. Blobby. It is the most insane fish on Earth. And this was 5 years ago. And I remember saying to them, this is the sort of thing that we should be pushing out there. It's just amazing. And the beautiful thing about Twitter and these sort of things is it's instant. You can see these weird, amazing creatures on the spot. Has anyone found Mr. Blobby? Of course, the teacher beat you all. Sucks to you. That's all about winning the audience over. Okay. And most importantly, the system will allow, it's all built in one system. The worst thing in the world is when you hand over to staff and you say, here's where you go and do this, and here's where you go and do that. It's a different system, and you need a different login, and then if you want to blog, you're over here, and our event calendar's over here, and you've got to, you know, give a urine sample before you use it. Bottom line is, we want one simple system. When you come in there, there's 19 buttons down the side for all the assets, and you can go, publish, yes, type it, done, end of story. Just like WordPress, any of these sort of simple systems. We want it to be simple. So, that's in a nutshell. Now I'm going to talk to you about some questions that management asked us, and here are our answers, and hopefully these will be beneficial. What I found interesting about some of these questions is, working outside the museum, sometimes I sit with clients and ask these questions, and there's stunned looks on their faces, on their faces as well. So here we go. I'm sure you've come across a lot of these before, but... ever heard this one before? So this new system is going to be amazing. So when it goes live, it's all done. The answer is no. We're going to have to work incredibly hard to build communities. In some areas of our management, there is an assumption that we push it live, and then just masses of people will come in. Yeah! But of course, that's not going to happen. The reality is, when we go live, there's going to be dead silence and crickets cheeping. And what's those little roly-poly grasses going past? And then maybe after a few months of working our asses off, there's going to be a comment, and we're all going to go, yeah! And it's going to be something about Viagra, but that's okay. Will we moderate? This is a big one. And we won this battle again. We won a few battles in the end. The answer's no. We're going to have a simple login process, and I know what you're thinking. That will cut down to 8% of the audience. We've heard that this morning from the Marty presentation before. But that simple process, once logged in, we're going to give them full freedom. That means that they will do whatever they want. They can comment, tag, and all that sort of stuff. And what that allows us to do is to track them. So if they are bastards, we can warn them. You know, you're a bastard. And if they're a total bastard, then we turn them off. It's not that hard. Will the forced login alienate some users? We already heard that. So yes, basically, it'll suck. There was a guy who did a chart at one's talk, which was quite amazing, they showed the progress of their website when they launched the site with sign-off, and then they opened up so they had no sign-in at all, and the chart went right off up in the sky. We're aware that sign-off will cause problems, but at this stage, that's the way we're going to go live, and we're going to review it. Another huge one for our scientists. What if information is wrong? When scientists write something for a web, they have a very particular audience in mind. Does anyone take a stab at who it might be? Is it kids? Teachers? Other scientists, there you go. These guys are bastards. They don't care about you. You may think they care about you. They don't care about you at all. All they care about is their peers in, you know, some other foreign country. That's all they care about. Their great fear is that some single person who also studies upside down flies in Ethiopia might look at that web page and there's a spelling mistake or some factual bit of information is incorrect, and then write to them and go, you're not worthy of being an upside down fly scientist at all. Their huge concern is that someone will come in underneath this page that they write and write a comment that has factually incorrect information. The way we explained it to them is a quick way to solve this. You can treat it in two ways. Imagine if someone writes to a scientist and says, sends them a photo and says, I believe this is an upside down fly. And the scientist writes back and says, no, you're a dickhead. That's not an upside down fly. It's something else. Who's learned from that exchange? One person. But what happens if that exchange was online? Underneath the page, the person's written a comment saying, ah, here's another one. Isn't this an upside down fly? And the scientist can write straight back in and say, no, that's actually not. That's a good guess, but that's actually this. How many people learn from that? Countless people learn from that. So by allowing mistakes to happen online, everyone benefits. Everyone learns from it. And we do that with a number of things. One of them is to actually put author comments there. So instead of just having a normal comment, when an author comes back in, they're flagged in a different way. They're in a slightly different color, and it actually says staff member and tells them their expertise. The same with tagging. We make the two tiers of tagging. So you can see the difference between author tags and user tags. The other thing is that there is a whole community out there. And the end aim here is to really let them self-moderate. The aim here is that we don't hover over our website for the rest of our lives making sure that everything's okay. Really what we want to try and be doing is watching it for a while and then gradually handing it over and let these people come in. So what do we mean by that? What we're saying is that if someone comes to the website and they've become passionate about it and they learn from it, then they often share once they get better. So if they find out that someone's written something wrong, they'll normally come in for you and say, well, actually, that's not an upside down fly. That's something else. That's what we really want to achieve. And of course, in the worst case scenario, if there's really major problems, you know, users can report abuse. Of course, any asset that has a comment goes straight to that author anyway, so they're pretty aware of what's going on. Another one that's quite common is, what if tags are irrelevant? And a more particular one, what happens if someone writes a tag that's actually spelled incorrectly? Is that a problem? Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Who thinks a badly spelled tag is a good thing? Who thinks it's a bad thing? Only a couple of people. Well, I was hoping for more so I could abuse you. Abuse them anyway. Why is it a good thing? I think it's a great thing. I think it's fantastic. The best example I could give you, I don't know whether Roger Hudson's in the audience, but Roger did a test where he gave a number of people, and I can't remember any of the facts about this, so I'm just going to make them up, but he gave a lot of people a photo of a redback spider, and he said, give me some tags. What tags would you use for this photo? And we were stunned at the amount of tags. We'd sort of expected, you know, a small set. Of course, the long tail would suggest that, you know, there would be a long tail of keywords. We'd expected a big bunch of common keywords or tags and a small subset. But what we actually got was a small common group and a massive subset. And we were staggered by the amount of different spellings that people chose to tag the spider. Now, what does that say to you? That's actually beneficial. If someone puts an incorrect tag on a page, that means that they think that's how it's spelled, or they've messed up. Other people may do the same. That goes into the search results. We're broadening the net. So actual spelling mistakes are beneficial. That's my argument anyway. And the most important thing is, just because it's not relevant to you doesn't mean it's not relevant to someone else. As I said before, who's going to deal with the comments? Well, authors. One of the things we said before is we want them to take responsibility. So when an author writes an asset, they actually get all this information directly to them. So when a comment comes in, it comes to them. Now, I don't know, who remembers the very first comment they've got when they wrote a blog? Did anyone remember? Okay, let's go back a step. Who's ever written a blog? That's good. I was going to go back a step further and who's ever heard of a blog, but that's okay. None of you remember the very first time you got a comment on your blog. You cynical bastards. I remember it. It was an amazing experience. Someone's commented on my blog. And what we really want them is feel that joy as well. By them owning it, they get to experience directly this exchange with people. What if we're overwhelmed by comments? We wish. We wish. We're going to work our asses off. We're not going to be inundated with comments. There's going to be tumbleweed and crickets. It ain't going to happen. And we're also going to have invited our experts there. We already talked about this one. It's a common question. Should we allow staff to do it? In our case, yes, as we said. Come on, you. Yes. Another one. Should we have a single voice? This is a very print-based methodology. Do you want to uncover this? A lot of government departments. We need a voice. And I love the way they describe this voice. Imagine as a person, it's formal and yet informal. It's chatty and, you know, it's slightly psychotic. It's impossible to get this voice. I've tried. The only way I could think of it is those computer voices. Was it Fred? Hello. Anyway, there's no answer to this. You can't do a single voice. But what we're going to do is provide a range of single voice. We'll have that boring, corporate-y, chatty, friendly fucking voice over in the corner for the about pages. And then for different ad sets, we'll have different voices. It's inevitable. Some are going to be written for kids, some for scientists, some for teachers. You can't have the same voice. And then for blog posts, you need completely individual voices. They're people with passion, individuals. So no single voice. And I think we've almost come to the end. I'm exhausted. I don't know about you. How do you encourage all this stuff? Because this is the big question. It's so easy to put comments on a page and walk away. So many sites out there, they just go, yep, add comments, add keywords, whatever it is, walk away. How do you build them up? The reason why I said before we're going to have to work hard is because every time someone comments, we're going to have to jump in and respond until this thing gets going. That means answering comments, encouraging them to comment. That means you don't ever finish something off. Unfortunately, many people in the museum's answer to life is very definitive. So if someone writes something, they'll say, no, this is the answer. But that's not really what you want to do. What you want to do is say, no, this is the answer. You can find some more information here. What do other people think? Does that make sense? What you're really trying to do is encourage people to take part. You also want to reward good behavior, promote outside, work your ass off, all that sort of stuff. And eventually, really, the end goal for all of this sort of stuff is to build up enough community and enough passion within the site from this community that you can gradually pull back. You can never fully pull back. I've run a mail list, I know. You walk away, you go to bed one night, and the entire list's insane with, you know, vitriol. But a website's got to be the same. You've got to still be able to maintain it, but a lot of the information exchange can be done via the community once it's up and running. So, quick summary. It's been a painful, slow journey. However, if I can use this clicker, there has been some unexpected benefits. And as I said, if you're in this similar situation, the sort of small glimmers of hope you can have is that while other people are probably doing it faster, by doing it slower, you might do it better. Does that make you feel better? But regardless, all the stuff aside, it's been an incredibly fun journey. There was someone who used to sit in the cubicle behind me, poor people. And one day they poked their head around the corner. I used to work with this girl called Renee. And this woman poked her head around the corner and said, all I hear is you and Renee sitting there laughing, and then you would say, fuck, and then they'd be all after. For 3 months, that's all I heard. It's been an incredibly fun journey. So I hope you enjoy your journey too. Thank you very much.